Welcome to Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sirgun Kaur. In today's episode, I'm talking with Joss Jaffe, who is a musician, singer, producer, and workshop leader who has been based in Los Angeles, California. He told me that he's actually been touring full-time since January of 2017. He has taught and performed at large-scale yoga and conscious living events around the world, including but not limited to Wanderlust, Bhakti Fest, Lightning in a Bottle, Yoga Journal Conference, Korea Yoga Conference, and True Nature. He has 4 albums of original music incorporating mantras, traditional sounds of India, and modern instrumentation. And his most recent album, which I recommend you check out, is called Meditation Music, and it debuted on the top 10 Billboard New Age chart. So this was a super fun conversation. Even though Joss had been going to Bhakti Fest, we had actually never crossed paths, so this was our first time meeting and chatting, and I look forward to sharing it with you. Let's get started. Welcome, Joss. So you are in Asia right now, correct?
Yes, I'm in Japan.
Oh, that's so cool. Where are you in Japan?
I'm in a really beautiful area called Miyazaki, which is in the south. It's the southeast coast, and it's really quite beautiful. I'm looking outside now, and there's bamboo and the ocean, and waves are breaking on this rocky reef, and it looks a little bit like Hawaii, actually, although it's kind of cold. It's a little colder, but it's very green, and it's quite beautiful. This is my third time here on tour, and I'd never heard of Miyazaki before. I met my friend Maurice, who's a wonderful woman who lives down here and teaches yoga and plays music. And so she invited me down, and the community is just really amazing. It's kind of a unique part of Japan where people are very relaxed. They're into surfing. It's not quite as hustle bustle as like you would experience in a place like Tokyo or, Osaka or something like that. So it's fun to come down here. It's like a little retreat.
And so you do concerts down there of kirtan, of sacred music?
Yeah. So we did 5 events in 5 days, and I do kind of a mix of things. So I certainly do kirtan. That's the main thing that I'm known for. So we did a couple kirtans at a couple different yoga studios around here. But I also play reggae music and different styles of music. And so in Japan they call it live or live house. So they like kind of set up like a little club or a little house or something, and we do a concert. And so that was really fun. On Saturday night we played at a live house called Cinema Heaven right on the beach. It was a lot of fun.
Oh wow.
And then the third thing I do is workshops, so live music yoga and also mantra and bhakti workshops. So we did a couple of those also. So it was a busy week.
Yeah. So does someone translate for you when you do workshops, or do you do
yes.
Yeah.
In Japan and Korea and other parts of Asia, you definitely need a translator. And Maurice, my friend and coworker here, she speaks fluent Japanese, so she was the translator here. But yeah, that's an important consideration. Especially if you're going to teach, you have to either speak Japanese or have a translator.
Yeah, that I found that totally. It was a consideration that I didn't really think that much into, which is funny because I am bilingual, so I do know that there's some difficulty in there's some lost stuff in translation.
Oh yeah.
When I was in Spain, I asked, could anyone translate for me? And so they went through like 3 of them because, it's one thing to be able to speak 2 languages, but like translation is an art,
Absolutely. And especially when you're doing kind of these esoteric sort of yoga workshops and stuff like that, it can get wacky really fast. And I've learned kind of the hard way that I'm from California, right? So, unfortunately it just doesn't work. A lot of this sort of Cali lingo, like a lot of the yoga teachers would be like, open your heart and expand your consciousness. Or I mean, like a lot of that stuff just doesn't translate, you know?
There's like no word. Yeah.
I mean, there is, there's a different way to say that, but it's, you know, I mean, you know, the Asian languages are actually quite metaphysical and deep, but it's like, it's different. And so what I found to be the most successful is just to talk as simply as possible. Like one of my heroes is Bob Marley. And in interviews, he would always say, you know, I want to sing and talk so that even a five-year-old can understand exactly what I'm saying. And like, that's kind of the way I approach it is, and people say I'm successful at that. They say, we like the way you talk. It's very clear and it's very concise. And so I try and just, you know, get right to the point really fast. But there's a lot of, you know, you can get lost in the weeds pretty quick with, you know, talking about mantras and yoga and stuff.
Yeah. I totally relate to that. And, and I mean, you know, Spanish is, you know, different enough from English, but like the, you know, Japanese is way, I can only imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's quite different. It's quite different. And what's actually really interesting for me is meeting the people, like Maurice, and I have friends in China. Richard Bainbridge is a popular yoga teacher, and, you know, different people I meet as I travel on this part of the world that are basically expats, you know, from US or Canada or Europe or something. And they're fluent. They're totally fluent in the language. And so I learn a lot from them because they offer me like a lens into the culture. Because like we speak the same language, but then they've also lived here for like over 20 years. So, you know, it's cool. It's like you meet really interesting people like that when you do these sorts of events over here.
Yeah, that's really useful, I find, to have someone, especially someone who sort of understands your background, which it sounds like she does, to be able to kind of, because people who, you know, when you're in a culture, you're not so aware of how others might find it different or
absolutely
perceive certain things, or, you know,
it's a big, there's a big learning curve, you know, and it's interesting because like I was just doing a wonderful event in China with Dave Stringer, who's another amazing mantra chanter and kirtan leader. And he's a really cool guy. And like, you know, a lot of times people sort of go to these places and they just sort of, you know, want to, you know, really show what they can do. But Dave is like, he goes there and he's like, you know, I'm primarily here to learn. I'm primarily here to share and to learn. And that's a really good approach, I think, because, you know, it's like, yes, you know, we are teachers and we have a lot to share, but sometimes we end up learning like way more than we actually end up teaching, you know, when you come to another place. And so anyway, I just thought that was relevant. And I think it's a good approach, you know, to come as a really just to exchange and interact and learn and, you know, be humble in the approach, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To look at it as an exchange.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's really cool. So are you, this is your third time in Asia. Are you traveling and touring most of the time?
Yes, I tour and travel full time. It's been 3 years of that lifestyle. I started in January of 2017. And I sort of cast a wide net back then and, you know, was open to sort of any opportunities. And where my music really started taking root was here in Asia. And I've had a lot of success in Korea. I've done the Korea Yoga Conference 2 years in a row as a teacher and a faculty member there. And the Thailand Yoga Conference, I did that 2 years. And then in Japan has been fun. A lot of yoga is very popular here. Smaller events. Japan is interesting. It's like space is such at a premium, you know, everything is very small. So even event workshops and spaces are small, even the popular ones. So, which I actually kind of like, I like this kind of boutique feeling of it here. Everything is very intentional and, you know, I've been doing a lot. So, last year I was in Asia 6 months and this year it's looking like I'm going to be here for about 5 months. And then I come back to California in generally around February or March. And that's when sort of the festivals start cooking up over there. And I do Cali in the West Coast, kind of in the summertime. So that's been the pattern the last 2 years. But, you know, it's everything is kind of uncertain in this musician lifestyle. You know, every day I do it, I give thanks that I'm doing it another day. And I feel successful just getting through another day. And it's a dream life to share, you know, my passion with the world this way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could be doing, you know, something that you don't love and not succeeding at it. So.
Yeah. And it's sad. I mean, yeah, that's a lot of the reality that we're dealing with on this planet is, you know, jobs we don't like and things like that. And, you know, and it's, as a musician, it's somewhat precarious at times that path that you're walking. It's such a reward when it lines up like that. And, I use the analogy like surfing. I'm a surfer and, you know, you don't make every wave, you know, you fall a lot, but when it lines up, it feels so good. And you just have to keep paddling out. I mean, if you want it, it just depends on how bad you want it. You have to just go for it and work really hard and, you know, and then it starts lining up. So
yeah,
God willing.
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's like the surfing. It certainly teaches you how to allow the path to unfold and get out of your way and all the things that we talk about in yoga anyway, you know, but to actually live it is can be a little scary. And so,
it's very scary. It can be very, very scary. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of, it's just not that kind of, you know, two paychecks, you know, hitting every month in your bank account kind of salary lifestyle. It's not secure and comfortable. It is scary. It's definitely not for everyone. I mean, I also consult, I do consulting for other musicians and, you know, honestly, I mean, I hate to say it, but for some people, it's actually better just to have a really stable job and do music on the side. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's interesting. Like I know yoga teachers and artists and stuff that are really, resistant to that in a way. It's like this idealistic life that you want this very kind of, you want to do it all, I'm losing my thoughts here, but it's, sometimes people put an emphasis on only making money from one thing. And there's some sort of legitimacy that comes from that. And, you know, but honestly, it's like at the end of the day, I tell people like, what's important is the action, is making the art or doing the practice or doing the yoga. And there's so many different ways to get to that result, you know, and, you know, it might actually just be too hard to like, you know, do it full time because it's hard to do that. And, you know, and if you're doing some other thing half time and doing this half time and, you know, that's fine. And I just, one of the things that I love about traveling is seeing the way people are so creative, you know, in different places, you know, where they live. And, you know, like here in Japan, people sell spices or they make salves and creams, or they, you know, get herbs and stuff, or, you know, pick vegetables. And like, there's a lot of different ways to kind of, you know, do your lifestyle. And, and it doesn't have to just come from one source. Anyway, I feel like I'm getting a little off on a tangent.
No, this is totally up my alley because so one of the other things that I do is I coach people and I work with this man who has a boot camp called the Unlimited Abundance Boot Camp, right? So this is a theme that we talk about a lot where it like when you think you can only get want from one thing,
source.
You're just blocked yourself off from all the multitude potential of ways it could come to you, you know?
Absolutely. And one story I've been telling everybody lately and my clients is that I feel like I'm like a hunter-gatherer, you know, in the ancient societies of hunter-gatherers where they kind of move around and hunt for their food and gather their food. But my weapon, my spear or whatever, is my creativity, right? Mm. So I have to suss out these opportunities and I have to be really, you know, crafty about it. Like how do I find this and be resourceful? And because it'd be so easy to just, oh, you know, it's not working, or, oh, these people don't want to hire me, and, you know, this isn't going to work. And because, you know, we do face a lot of rejection as musicians. I mean, we put ourselves out a mm-hmm. lot mm-hmm. And it doesn't always land, you know? And so you kind of have to just, you know, bake that in, that's just going to happen a lot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and then you be really kind of creative and figure out ways you can make it work. You know, how mm-hmm. do you get more people to connect with your music? How do you find a new place to play, a new place to teach, and a new way to convey that, you know? And so I really find a lot of inspiration from other musicians and the way that they're doing that and being successful. And, you know, I really want the kind of the consciousness to move more in that direction, that we're all sort of in this together, you know? We're not like competing necessarily with each other. And, you know, there's not this kind of scarcity mentality, like there's only so many slots at a festival, or there's only so many, you know, places to play. It's like, I don't see it that way. There's like so much opportunity. And I think people need to get out of that, oh, there's only these places to play. Like, that's not true, you know?
Right,
there's how many billion people on this planet? And you know what they need? They need good music, and they need to sing, and they need to clap their hands and, you know, break out of the doldrums of day-to-day life. You know, that's hard. And music is really a very powerful vehicle for that, you know? And so that's why I want to encourage musicians, like, to, you know, it's hard and you got to be really smart and resourceful, but, you know, you can totally do it. And like, you just got to go out and do it, you know?
Yeah.
If you feel called to do it though, you know?
Right. Like, right. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing is, you know, it might be totally fine to just sing karaoke on weekends, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Whatever. It's all good. Yeah. I mean, also, you know, I don't have a family. I mean, I have a family, but I don't have any kids. I'm not mm-hmm. married, you know? So I'm like, you know, I kind of have that independent lifestyle where I can do that. And it does get harder if you have kids and that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of dimensions to this, obviously.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, my dream was always to be a recording artist.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't have the life, you know, I have the two kids, so that works really well for me.
And I want that too. I mean, I would love to travel less, honestly. I mean, it's, you know, environmentally and for so many reasons, it's mm-hmm. what you're talking about is actually more sustainable in a lot of ways. And, you know, again, that's you being creative, and you've had a lot of success with that. And I've seen you from a distance for a long mm-hmm. time. And so, you know, kudos for that. And maybe I can learn some tricks from you, you know?
It's just, you know, I think your life evolves the way that it's meant to, you know, and so for me, you know, since I have the two kids, being in China mm-hmm. for 5 months would be uh-huh. not mm-hmm. the ideal. But for you, it works perfectly, you know.
I know, right? Yeah. So it's all a different a different journey.
And who knows what tomorrow brings. That's the exciting thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Oh, it's so nice to connect with you.
You've been trying to do this for a little while, huh?
Fan of your music, and I really like your voice.
Oh,
and,
thank you. Well, same here.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was listening to a track that you did with Suzanne Sterling and
Bayou
Tall, which was so uh-huh. good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Was that recent?
That's, you're talking about the Ganesha song.
Yeah.
That song is super fun. That came out on my album, Sangha, in 2015. Then we remixed it last year, and DJ Taz Rashid, who's super cool.
Yes. Okay. I know him from another life. Not as a DJ. He mm-hmm. was the assistant to the vendor coordinator at Bhakti Fest.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so that's how I knew him. And I didn't realize he had taken off as a DJ.
Oh, yeah, he's super successful.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I asked him to be on the podcast too. I hope that
works
out, because be cool to reconnect. But I saw that he had remixed your track. So how did that work?
Yeah, I love working with Taz. He is super awesome. And we're actually, it's interesting you say that, because we have a full album that we're actually, I just got the vocal mixes back today. And it's a 10-track album. And interestingly enough, it's all in English. So it's kind of like pop, ooh, like dream pop, kind of indie pop, electro sort of stuff. So to go back to what I was saying about, you know, like, don't sort of paint yourself into any corners, you know, like, you just be open-minded. I mean, I think that it's good for musicians to sort of bend those genres these days, you know, like, it's not the way it was in the old days where you're kind of like stuck in one genre and you have to, like, you know, stay in that one, you know. And now it's like, you know, do the music that you think is gonna connect and that you feel strongly about. And so we're doing 10 tracks, and it's really beautiful music. I can't wait to share it with the world. There's you know, there's spiritual themes to it, but some of the songs are love songs, and some of the songs I've been writing since I was quite young. There's a couple that I actually wrote in high school. I started writing them in high school.
Wow.
And it's sort of like this project that I've always wanted to do forever. And I was just shopping it around to different producers, and it kind of never landed. And then Taz was just like, I love that idea. And so we've been working on it for like a year.
So
and
it's
going to be cool. Yeah, Taz does a lot of different things. I am also a producer.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Taz is a very good producer and a remix artist and a DJ. And he does workshops. You know, it's like me. You kind of have to wear a bunch of hats, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So do you know what that album's going to be called?
I'm still trying to find out the name. Like, it hasn't come to me yet.
Okay. All right. Well.
Maybe we'll have a podcast and listen to it.
Yes. So far, we're all in this together. You've said,
yeah,
your weapon is your creativity.
The creativity
weapon, maybe.
Yeah. Your hunter gatherer tool.
Yeah.
So Taz is super cool. He's great, and there was a lot of really talented remix artists on that CD. That was a really fun CD. We had Blue Tech, who's a really popular ambient DJ, and he remixed a song. And then Robin Livingston, who's super cool. He basically worked with MC Yogi. They were like buddies. They were like the Bhakti brothers on his first albums, like Ganesh Is Fresh and all those original albums, like Robin.
Oh, yeah.
The music, you know, so he's really talented. He lives up in Marin County in California. And then who else is on it? Ra Avis, who was a founder of Desert Dwellers and Shaman's Dream. And yeah, so it's a fun album, but it's interesting because that album was like really high energy, because I thought that's what people kind of wanted, with like wanderlust and this sort of yoga dance party kind of vibe, you know. And I release it, and you know, it did get quite a bit of play, but you know, then I immediately, the next album is like an ambient meditation album that's like pure, and that's the one that charted on Billboard, you know. So I'm like, you know, I got signed to a record label, and I'm like, you know, I don't know what people want. I just make the music that I like.
That's really cool. So
I
sort of wonder about that, because it seems like live people are more interested in jumping up and down, and then
like, well, DJ
listening,
the DJ culture, the DJ energy, you know, that's so good, because the music pops so hard, and it always sounds good coming out of the speakers. And you know, they're playing fully mastered tracks, and they're linking it together with this software. It's an amazing thing what DJs do, you know. And it's so amazing, but it's really different what live musicians do. I mean, there's so much more dynamics. Like, DJs tell me, I give them my music, and they're like, I love your music, Joss, but it's just got too much dynamics. I can't put it into my set, because a DJ needs that boom, boom.
Yeah. Right.
So it's just a different thing. So that's why I actually made that album, because I wanted to, you know, give it to the DJ culture, which I really like. I really like that whole world a lot, you know. But yeah.
Yeah. So you're talking about the album that I listened to. Oh, it was a compilation. So it's Dub Mantra Sangha, this one.
Remix. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So Dub Mantra Sangha. So Dub Mantra is my concept that the first album came out in 2012.
Got it.
And the whole idea is merging Sanskrit chants, and it later became sacred chants in different languages, with reggae. And that later became African and kind of pan, kind of global groove kind of stuff. So it was like this sort of melting, mixing ground of blending these styles of music. And I've done three albums like that. The first was Dub Mantra, which is the most kind of acoustic and kind of rootsy. And then Sangha, which means community in Sanskrit, had 14 really high profile guest artists on it. Amazing artists like Kayu Paul and Donna DeLore and Suzanne Sterling. And also
really cool.
So we had Michael Rose, who is, he's a Jamaican reggae singer, and he was the lead singer of Black Uhuru.
Oh,
so they were the first reggae band to win a Grammy in the 80s when the Grammys started the reggae. So he's like the real deal. Like if you ask any reggae head, they're like, yeah, I know Michael Rose, you know? So that was an honor. And he sang in Hebrew of all languages.
So it was that. And a track called Elohim.
Yeah. Elohim. Yeah. With Shimshai. Shimshai's on that too. And so, so it was a real mashup kind of a thing. And, you know, I tried to really, like I said, cast a wide net. There's a song in Japanese. There's a song in Hawaiian.
Wow.
Aloha. And there's a song in English. And there's a Tibetan mantra, Lotus, Om Mani Padme Hum, with Masood Ali Khan and Sheila Bringy, and just really great artists. It was an honor to work with all these people. It was really it was a hard album to make. I mean, it took me 2.5 years to make it, and it was really expensive. And
I bet.
But it was really.
Did they
fun.
All record remotely?
Some of them did. Some of them did, and some of them. I was living in the Bay Area at the time, and some of them came into the studio. I mean, I always prefer to connect in person. I think there's just more that you can communicate in person in the studio. Because, you know, making music tricky, you know, you've got to get just that right. It's a kind of magical, that right take, you know, it's hard to get that. And because then if they do it remotely, they'll send you like gobs of tracks and then you're kind of like sifting through it and, you know.
A lot of listening, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of, I mean, there's no way about it. I mean, making music takes a lot of work. I mean, that's the reality is that, but it's fun. It's also fun and, you know, you have to enjoy the process, you know.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So were you based in San Francisco when you're, or in the Bay Area?
Yeah,
when you're in
for
California?
10 years.
Okay.
Now I'm sort of a wanderer. I'm a sort of a traveler. I don't have a permanent place, but my family lives down in Southern California. So I kind of orbit Southern California these days. But yeah, I do gigs in the Bay Area. I lived there for 10 years and I have a lot of connections there still. So.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
And you had a studio there, I guess.
I have a mobile
studio
that I record other artists with, but that studio was made at Seven Generation Studio with Chris Kratke, and he works a lot with, I'll definitely give him a shout out. He's really, really good. Him and Ben Lineback are sort of the two you know, world music producers, mantra music producers in the Bay Area. I would highly recommend both of them. And, Chris has done stuff with Sounds True and Shiva Ray and Suzanne Sterling. And so he's really, really, really good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of, lot going on in the Bay Area. I am not familiar with Northern California.
You got to come
up I know
up there.
Southern, but
let's go on tour.
Maybe when my 3-year-old's a little bit older.
Just throw him in the tour bus. Let's go. A family trip.
Well, that was the idea, but my life took a little bit of a little different turn in the past few weeks. So
I understand.
we were gonna buy a mobile home and tour, and then instead we got a divorce and I moved to the Pacific Northwest. No, you know, it was brilliant. We both feel like we entered sort of another dimension.
All right. Well, congratulations. Like
with our lives. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was great.
And your new life. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I have a new life. So
congratulations.
And I get to be here doing a podcast with you on a Monday night.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So where are you off to next?
So the adventure continues. We just finished our last event. I did 11 shows in Japan in about 2 weeks. And tomorrow I'm flying to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, of all places. And I'm playing my first concert in Malaysia. And I'm really excited about it. It's with this, like, apparently like a Malaysian pop star named William Ko. So I'm really excited.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun.
Have you heard his music?
Yeah, he's a really, really good singer. He's like a very, very good singer. And so I have my tablas and also my guitar. And, you know, we're going to put together a really nice concert of a mixture of different songs, you know, some Malay and Chinese songs and some mantra and some pop songs and original songs and some instrumental music. And it's going to be cool. You know, that's what I love. I love to just play with different people because I'm classically trained on the tablas. I've done a lot of different music, different, you know, Western classical, a little bit of jazz and world music. And really my favorite thing to do is kind of in that sort of improvisatory realm where you meet somebody, a great musician, maybe you don't even speak the same language, right? And you just put together something awesome. And that was sort of the whole crux of the idea of Sangha, of Dev Mantra Sangha, is like getting people who maybe don't even speak the same language from around the world and making something really beautiful that like no one had ever heard before, you know? And I feel like that's where I really shine because music is a universal language. I mean, it truly is, you know, you don't need to even speak the same language. You know, I played this gig at the Live House on Saturday night and I couldn't communicate with any of the band at all, like nothing at all. But I, you know, I could say A, like A minor or something like that. And they're like, okay, A minor, you know, and then we're just off to the races, you know, and we're just jamming. Cause you know, a good drummer knows where the rhythm is. And like one time he came in 6/8, I'm like, no, like 4/4, like taka taka taka. He's like, okay, you know, because I showed him the pulse.
Oh yeah, well, if you can communicate percussion, then you're already a step ahead. Like I wouldn't be able to do that.
Don't say that. You need to do a workshop.
Oh, is that what you do? You do percussion workshops?
I do different workshops. I do one rhythm workshop, or a couple different rhythm workshops. Introduction to rhythm, and it's like embodiment of rhythm. And I use some tools from tabla in India, but I also do opening the voice workshops and singing bhakti workshops, mantra. I do a number of different things. So yeah, just try to get people to be musical.
Sweet. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think I might need the percussion one. I feel a little lost in the percussion realm.
I hear that a lot. Oh, sorry, you go.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I had this really great guitarist, Monica Page Subia in Phoenix, who was also a mantra artist in her own right, but she would always just take care of like telling the band exactly what to do. And, you know, I can do that too, I guess, but it takes I don't have as like distinctive, clear of an idea of what exactly I want. Also, because I think I show up and I'm like, let's see what you bring.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, you know, it's really interesting that you say that because that's not unusual. I hear that actually from a lot of, especially singers, you know, who feel like they need to strengthen their rhythm. And, you know, all I know is from my own experience. It was funny actually. So my mom started me on guitar when I was 9. So that was my first instrument. And then I started bass when I was 13 because I like the sound of the bass. I was like, it's so low and funky. And then I had this experience because one of my earliest musics that I loved was reggae music. I kind of grew up in like a beach town, like surfing and, you know, like reggae was sort of the popular music then, you know, as it is in a lot of like island kind of beach areas, right? And around the world. And it's a very, you know, global music in that kind of genre. And anyway, I would listen to the way like Bob Marley would play the guitar and it was like so rhythmic. It was almost like he was playing a drum, that chick it, right? It was like he was drumming, basically. He wasn't even playing a chord sometimes. And I had this like epiphany, and I was like, I got to get this rhythm thing together. Like, I have to really understand what it is. And I would hear these different styles of music, like, you know, African music a lot was like not something I was familiar with. I'm like, what's going on with the beats? And I could tell that you could count four, but like there was all these other beats there. And I later learned that it was actually like this 12-8 polyrhythm, you know? So it's like a three and a four on top of each other, you know, but I couldn't understand it. And then I didn't understand, obviously, Indian rhythms, which are like super complicated. They have things in seven and odd time signatures. And, you know, so to make a long story short, I'm like, you know, I just want to understand this better. I just really want to know it. And so I bought a little drum, a little djembe, and I started just drumming on it. And I started taking lessons, and it became this like lifelong journey. And then I found my way to tabla, and I started learning tabla, and it just got deeper and deeper. And the reason why I'm telling you this story is because I don't necessarily think everyone needs to be a tabla player, but you know, it's a hard thing to learn. But you know, the deeper I got into rhythm, the more it helped every other part of my music, my singing, my guitar playing, like everything just got better, you know, because that rhythm, and to really approach it with a lot of discipline. I know that's kind of a harsh word, but you know, to work with the metronome and like just really develop that sense of rhythm. Cause you hear this a lot from people, even real musicians, you know, they say, oh, you know, I'm having trouble with rhythm, or, oh, I'm, you know, great guitar players like, oh, I can't sing or something like that. And the reality is it's just all of these skills. I mean, yes, there is the person that sort of comes out of the womb with a golden voice, right? There's that situation. But in general, people have to work hard to get these skills. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try and teach people in this workshop, is that you can learn anything. You can learn to become an amazing singer. It may take a lot of work, you know, but, and then the next thing I say is that it should also be fun. You know, the process of learning itself should be fun. I mean, there is work and practice involved, but you do it in a way that is fun. And then it keeps unfolding and being more fun, you know, but that a lot of music just comes from listening, being able to listen better. So singing is a lot about listening. It's singing in tune. People say, oh, I can't sing in tune. And that's actually not true. They can sing in tune. Or someone says they're tone deaf. It's totally not true. You're like, which is higher? Ah, ah. And they're like the second one, right? there's no one who's like really truly tone deaf, you know?
Right.
And you know, they can differentiate pitches. And the thing is that it's just like a approach, a closer and closer refinement. It's a refinement of your ear and your musical ability to kind of keep developing it more and more. And that's why music to me is so amazing, because there's no end really. Like you see these, you know, master musicians, like one of my teachers, Zakir Hussain, and he's famous for saying that he doesn't know anything, that he's still learning, you know, that his dad is the real guru. And like he's so amazingly humble, and he's one of the best drummers in the world, you know? So like, that's the kind of mentality that I think really serves a musician, is being able to approach it from that perspective of that continuous learning process. And then the last thing I'll say about this, I'm really into science, and I keep getting people send me these articles, and it's amazing. Like, these articles are incredible, saying that like music is one of the best things you can do for your brain. Like learning music it helps, you know, the neurons and the synapses to fire and connect. And it keeps the brain young, and it keeps it very active. And the process of singing itself has all these health benefits, you know. It can reduce cortisol, and it can increase serotonin and tryptophan and these sort of endorphin chemicals in the brain. It makes you happy. It makes you feel less depressed. You know, it deepens your breath, and the deeper your breathing response is, the more relaxed you become. A shallow breathing is associated with a stress response, and a deeper breathing is associated with a relaxation response. And that's why yoga and like, or even surfing or activity makes us more relaxed ultimately. Mm. But singing forces you to do that because you sing a long tone. See, I didn't take in a deep enough breath. So you need to take a deeper breath to sing mm-hmm. a long note, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if it's a higher note. But anyway, so that's my long spiel there. I kind of went on a tangent. But
that's great. Yeah. I was being interviewed by someone who was a singing teacher, and she was she had explained some of that to me about that how it's a form of exercise, and that was totally fascinating to me.
Yeah, totally, yeah. totally. Yeah, it's fun to teach. It's really, really fun to teach. And actually, that's one of the reasons why I particularly like teaching here in Japan. And, you know, also in a place like Korea where, you know, it's interesting because people are actually quite shy, right? Like very shy. And right. and so to get through that barrier is actually the hardest part. Mm. And so you have to create an environment that lets people open up. But once they open up, it's like they are so happy. And it's like it's the best, nicest experience to give someone. And sometimes people come to a workshop and they're like, I don't even know why I'm here. I don't even really like singing or want to sing, you know, but then they leave and they're so happy, you know? Yeah. So it's cool. I feel like it's important work. I mean, you know, it may not seem like that from, I don't know, some like, I don't know, global economic perspective or whatever.
Well, but like, come now. What's more important than being happy?
I know, right? There you go. Bhutan has a ministry of happiness now, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
No, I know. So that's what's important to me.
Yeah, I wasn't going to argue with you there. That sounds like very important work.
Yeah.
That's so neat. So what do you do to get people who are culturally very shy to open up? Is there something?
I think, a couple jokes always helps. You know, uh-huh. I have a joke I've been telling now that like, cause karaoke is very popular. So uh-huh. I'm like, I say, who likes to sing? And no one raises their hand. I'm like, who likes to do karaoke? And everyone raises their hand. And I'm like, okay, well, this is Sanskrit karaoke. And they laugh. And so, I don't know. You just need to like sort of demystify the process. Like I start by getting people to sigh, just go, ah, and then I'm like, okay, now sigh, but don't descend the note. Ah, right. And now oming, like basically they need to just like, it's sort of like fitness in a way. Like you kind of just have to start. You kind of just have to start doing a push-up or start running, you know, you just have to start. And once you're starting, it's like, oh, this isn't really that hard. You just breathe and make a sound, you know, like right. little kids do it. They scream and yell. And, you know, it's like a normal thing for humans to do, to make crazy sounds, you know,
right.
but there's just so much, you know, it's become this sort of, I don't know, like, I'm not Japanese, but I'm in America. It's like, I feel like there's this massive separation between, you know, the musician and then the audience. So the musician is sort of put up on this pedestal, like, you know, Taylor Swift or something. I mean, I love Taylor Swift. I'm not trying to be dismissive of her, but like, you know, it's like, she's a star, right? And she can do that because she's a star, but I can't do that because I can't carry a tune in a paper bag or whatever, you know? And so there's this idea that like, you can't actually do that because mm-hmm. someone else, and it's reinforced because, you know, like I, you know, this is kind of a tangent, but you know, I'm part of the Grammy Association and they offer
workshops. Thank you for being a member.
Yeah. and so like you go there and I went to this amazing, amazing workshop where this guy did like the vocal processing for Rihanna. And,
okay.
And people may not know this, but like a pop song. So this is a little bit of a tangent, but a pop song, there's not one producer. I mean, there's one main producer, but there's someone that produces just the drum track. And there's someone that produces just the keyboard track. And there's someone that just records her vocals, and then they send it to someone else, and they process the vocals. And then, you know, it's like there's a whole freaking team. There's a giant team of someone working
on it. It's like a movie.
Yeah, no, it is. That's why it costs millions of dollars to make these songs. And, you know, then people, you know, you know, make an indie song and they wonder why it doesn't pop. You know, it's like, you guys, you know, the marketing budget alone for that song is like 100 times what your whole album costs, you know?
Right.
So, you know, so it's anyway, so that's the point I'm trying to make is that system reinforces itself, right? So it becomes so separate from what a normal person can do because it's so specialized and has so much, you know, power. And that's beautiful. Like, I'm not knocking pop music. I actually really love it. But mm-hmm. I think that's one of the reasons why kirtan is becoming more popular because it takes it back. It takes the power back and it allows people to take that separation between the audience and the performer and sort of blend it more. It's like anybody can sing. Anyone, you know, there's that old book, Anyone Can Sing, you know, or Rise Up Singing or something like that. But really it was like that. It was like, you know, in America, from what I understood in the old days, like people would, you know, gather around the piano and like sing songs on a Sunday or whatever. And,
yeah.
You know, it was just more of a thing that everyone did. And you do find that still in Europe, like in Ireland or places like that, where, you know, the singing is more part of the, or India, you know, a lot of places in the world, you know, singing is Africa, especially, you know, is still a huge part of people, you know, being in community and connecting with each other. And, you know, anyway, so that's a long way of saying, that this is available to us and part of our job as musicians is not to increase that separation between me and the audience, but to bring it closer together and to give people this experience of singing, of being musicians, you know, because like, you know, there's an anecdote, like in some parts of Africa, there's not a word for musician because everybody plays, right? Everyone is a musician. Everyone is a singer. And, you know, so I think that's really important, to do is to bring that music back into people's life. And, you know,
That's really beautiful. I'd never heard that anecdote. It's interesting to me, because I say something similar a lot that, you know, you can sort of dance casually. You don't have to be a professional dancer. You could cook for someone casually. You don't have to be a chef to make someone a meal, but people feel very differently about singing.
Especially now in the modern time.
Yeah.
They should just get some auto-tune. And have you ever seen that YouTube video, auto-tune the news?
No.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, a lot of musicians now, kind of indie musicians, sort of hate auto-tune. And I actually think it's funny. I think it's kind of like why not use a tool? Sometimes people use it actually to help them sing better. But, you know,
it does give like a different sound. I think it's used a lot too, just to like give it sort of the
bling. Yeah.
Yeah. Just a better sound.
That sort of share sound. Yeah. I mean, well, there's also, you know, you can touch on equal temperament. That's a whole side of it too. I mean, it's actually detuning it kind of. So our brain is becoming more accustomed to the equal tempered, which is on the piano, which is not in tune from a harmonics perspective. You know, there's these sense differences. I think it's like 23 cents off the third, you know, and the fifth is off by 2 cents. So that's how they make the octaves. So, you know, not to go too deep into music theory, but like I think that's another reason why these sort of more ancient art forms are coming back. Like, you know, kirtan is accompanied by a shruti box or a tambura or a harmonium, which was originally a British instrument, right? But it creates that drone. And then from that drone, you sing on top of the drone and you yourself find the harmonies. And so it's this process of discovery, of learning how to resonate, of learning how to vibrate with another tone, you know, and that process is like deeply powerful. Like I remember when I first sang Ma, the note Ma, which is the fourth, like really, really, really in tune. And it was like my whole body was like vibrating. It was totally trippy, you know? And I like sort of got it. I'm like, okay, this is what it is, you know? and so that whole process of singing in tune is like, it's very similar to surfing. It's like when you're on that wave, you catch that first wave and your mind is like totally blown and you're like feeling yourself being propelled by the energy of this water that's moving and and it's traveled thousands of miles, and you know, you're just sort of flying on the water, and it's so amazing, like this totally cosmic experience, you know. And that's what music is when you're in tune and when you're in rhythm and everything is sort of firing, you're elevated, you know, like Bob Marley said, when the music hits, you feel no pain. And that's true. You know, you go into this other reality. And, mm-hmm. And so that's really what I want to share this with people, is that, you know, I don't just want them to be listeners. I want people to like really experience that, you know, mm-hmm. like I don't want them to watch other people surfing. I want to take them into mm-hmm. the wave. And then the analogy actually really works. I use that analogy a lot because, the voice is powered on a wave of prana, right? The breath, and you can't sing without breathing. Mm-hmm. And so in the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali says yoga, I think it's yoga chitta vritta nirodha. I think that's what it is. It's so vritta means wave, and chitta is consciousness or awareness, and or the mind. And so yoga and nirodha is cessation. So it means yoga is the cessation of the waves of the mind, mm. right? So through yoga, the yogi is actually looking for that calm mind where there actually aren't any waves, mm-hmm. you know? And so through the singing and the chanting and the yoga and the riding the waves of the prana and everything, you reach that place of stillness. And that's another amazing benefit of this particular practice, you know, is that's one of the end results, is this experience of meditation. You know, another story I'll tell you is Zakir Hussain. I remember once someone asked him, "Do you meditate? Like, do you do sitting meditation?" Mm-hmm. And he immediately, without a second, he's like, "Well, music is meditation." And we all laughed. It was like, because it's so true. It's like, mm-hmm. and he says all kinds of funny things like that. Like, you know, someone once asked him, like, "What's your religion?" You know, because in Indian music, some are Hindu and some are Muslim, and they use the different names, Ustad or Pandit or whatever. And someone mm-hmm. asked him, and he's like, "Musicians have our own religion." And I was like, yes, that's so true.
I have a sweatshirt that says music is my religion.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just sort of telling stories.
Wonderful. That's exactly what I wanted. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with me. It's been really, really, really cool to get to know you and hear what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much. I want to interview you and hear about you.
Next okay. podcast. Or, you know, you could start your own podcast. That could be.
I totally should. Yeah.
It could be one of the things that you do. Yeah. Yeah. So if people want to get in touch with you or find you, how can they do that?
Well, I'm everywhere. That's the thing musicians have to do. We have to be ubiquitous across all platforms and everywhere. And so you can find me, Joss Jaffe, JossJaffe. That's my social handle, I guess it's called, on all the platforms. And you can find me on wherever you get your music, Spotify or iTunes or Bandcamp. And thank you so much for listening to my music. I make it for you, so enjoy.
Are you JossJaffe.com?
Yes, my website is JossJaffe.com, and that you can find all the info there, my touring schedule.
And I will put that in the description box so people can click on it. Thank you so much, especially since I know is it like super early for you? Or
no, it's actually not. No, this is perfect. It's 11 a.m. here in Japan. It's almost 11 a.m.
perfect. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, don't tell us what happens. I know it's going to be the next day.
That's right. Yeah, I'm in the future.
Music does that too, right?
I know, right?
All right. Well, have a great day then.
Okay, thank you, Sirgan.